Blog Talk Radio. would be difficult for me to start this show at the beginning of the lecture again because it would bore those who have already heard this. But what I want to do is just read the first two short paragraphs that introduce this this essay. Because the name demonology covers dreams, omens, coincidences, luck, shortage, magic, and other experiences which shun rather than court inquiry, and deserve notice chiefly because every man has usually in a lifetime two or three hints in this kind which are especially impressive to him. They also shed light on our structure. The witchcraft of sleep divides with truth the empire of our lives, and this soft enchantress visits two children lying locked in each other's arms and carries them asunder by wide spaces of land and sea and wide intervals of time. And what he's saying there basically is you know, the our conscious and subconscious minds are merged as we sleep, and the enchantress comes in and creates the dreams, you know, and the demons and the spirits and the, everything are in that fourth dimensional frequency that we are in and when we sleep. So that's essentially what he's saying that it comes from. And he goes on quite a ways, an hour long, that I...
anthropomorphous that not possibly can he invent
invent any fable that shall not have a deep moral and be true in senses and to an extent never intended by the inventor. Thus all the bravest tales of Homer and the poets, modern philosophers can explain with profound judgment of law and state and ethics. Lucian has an idle tale that Pancrates journeying from Memphis to Colchis and waiting and wanting a servant took a door bar and pronounced over it magical words, and he stood up and brought him water and turned to spit and carried bundles, doing all the work of a slave. What is this by a prophecy of the progress of art? For Pancrates write Watt or Fulton, and for magical words write steam. And do they not make an iron bar and have and half a dozen wheels to work, not of one but of a thousand skillful mechanics? And nature, said Swedenborg, makes almost as much demand on our faith as miracles do. And I find nothing in fables more astonishing than my experiences in every hour. One moment of a man's life is a fact so stupendous as to take the luster out of all fiction. Lovers of marvels of what we call the occult and unproved sciences of mesmerism or of astrology or coincidences of intercourse by writing or by rapping or by painting with departed spirits need not reproach us with incredulity because we are slow to accept their statement. It is not the incredibility of this fact, but a certain want of harmony between the action and the agents. We are used to vaster wonders than these that are alleged. In the hands of poets of devout and simple minds, nothing in the line of their character and genius would surprise us, but we should look for the style of the great artist in it, look for the completeness and harmony. Nature never works like a conjurer to surprise, really by shocks, but by infinite graduation, so that we live embosomed in sounds we do not hear, sense we do not smell, spectacles we see not, and by innumerable impressions so softly laid on the though important, we do not discover them until our attention is called to them. For Spiritism, I show that no man, almost, is fit to give evidence. That I say to the amiable and sincere among them, these matters are quite too important than that I can rest them on any legends. If I have no facts, as you allege, I can well wait for them. I am content in and occupied with such miracles as I know, such as my eyes and ears daily show me, such as humanity and astronomy. If any others are important to me, they will certainly be shown to me. In times most credulous of these fancies, the sense was always met and the superstition rebuked by the grave spirit of reason and humanity. When Hector is told that the omens are unpropitious, he replies, "One omen is the best to fight for one's country." Euripides said, "He is not the best prophet who guesses well, and he is not the wisest whose guess turns out well in the event, but he who, whatever the event be, takes reason and probability for his guide." Swans, horses, dogs, and dragons, say Plutarch, are we distinguished as sacred and vehicles of the divine foresight, and we cannot believe that men are sacred and favorites of heaven. A poor shipmaster discovered a sound theology when in the storm at sea he made his prayer to Neptune. O God, thou mayest save me if thou wilt, and if thou wilt, thou mayest destroy me. But however, I will hold my rudder true. And let me add one more example of the same good sense in the story quoted out I was once traveling by the sea, there was one among the horsemen and attended us named Mazalan, a brave and strong man, and according to the testimony of all the Greeks and barbarians, a very skillful archer. Now, while the whole multitude was on the way, an augur called out to them to stand still, and this man inquired the reason of their halting. And the augur showed him a bird and told him if the bird remained where he was, he would where he was, it would be better for them all to remain. If he flew on, they might proceed, but if he flew back, they must return. And the Jew said nothing, but bent his bow and shot the bird to the ground. This act offended the ogre and some others, and they began to utter imprecations against the Jew. But he replied, "What for? Or wherefore? Why are you so foolish as to take care of this unfortunate bird? How could this fowl give us any wise directions respecting our journey, when we could not save his own life? Had he known anything of futurity, he would have come here to be killed by the arrow of Mazalan the Jew. It is not to be foreseen." Okay, I guess I'm back on. Sorry there, folks. I had difficulty. I guess I canceled myself out there. I hung myself up somehow. Sorry about that. And I realized that I was going over some stuff that we talked about last night. The interesting thing about it is that, I don't know. What I thought was interesting that he brought out was that it's all in our mind, and these omens are all in our minds, and these kind of things. And I used to play with the tarot, and I did a lot of tarot work, and it actually was fascinating, and many of my predictions came true. But many of them did not. But we get caught, carried away with the our curiosity of knowing, our curiosity, knowing the future. What will the future bring? We don't know what the future is. We can only predict, but we have no idea what the future really is and what it really means. And even in the tarot, you can predict circumstances possibly and whatnot, but you can't. In other words, once you put the seed of doubt in your mind about something in the future, you suddenly will not go that route. So in other words, whether it's destiny or whether it's pre-planned and earlier planning, you're essentially going where you're planned to go. I plan to leave this room, and I get up and leave the room, unfortunately, no one expects to die, right away. If they do, then, you try to prepare yourself for that. But most people die from accidental deaths and, wars and other frightening aspects of our human condition. But guess what I'm trying to get at is that we lead ourselves into the future. Nobody else leads us. We're not led by cards or by, pushed by demons or whatever. Our future is more or less what our present is and what our past has been. It's all a culmination of all those things, each minute of the future, second of the future. It's all based on the present. What your future will bring depends on what your present has brought or is, not necessarily what your past, because you can change. You may have made strategic changes in your life to avoid certain pitfalls, but once you get to the third stage of transcendence, into the point where you are contemplating death. So let's say contemplating fourth dimensional existence, crossing over, seeing the spirit side, transforming into spirit. That transformation, is what mankind is supposed to achieve. In his evolutionary stage. And that time is coming soon, according to the prophecies. But we'll wait to see. I do know by some evidence of this changing times of within my own life, I see, fortunately, I sense a sense of resignation, coming over me. Bliss, joy, happiness. More so than I ever did because, and I don't know if it's because I'm headed toward the end of time or headed toward ascension or just because I'm having a pretty good time in life in the sense that I'm traveling a path that's virtually unobstructed right now. It's a difficult path, but in the sense that everything is working, it means that this path is still viable to me. And once they stop working, once I can't read or write anymore or talk anymore, or once I can't present or something happens to the station, and I have to find another means to communicate. But in the same sense, what I am appealing to people for is that they understand that they live in two worlds. 8 or more hours a day, you're sleeping. And in that sleep, you are actually existing within a fourth dimensional universe. And a reality, if we can even define the fourth dimension as reality, it's more of not in the reality that we know, in third dimensional reality. There's pain and there's love and there's pleasure. But those are connected to the physical. Whereas in the fourth dimensional plane, where in the sleep realm, right, we see bountiful worlds, just things, regardless of what, we don't know where they are, where they're coming from. We implant ourselves right there, walking the circles or walking in the woods or walking on the buildings or walking into rooms or that we've never seen before. These are all our dreams. And, this is our nightly time of the day you're asleep. But sleep is our connection and our rest, and our connection to the universe. It's our plugging into the Akashic record. Charging, you know, our batteries every night. It's like we have to charge cell phone or whatever battery needs charging overnight. But from the perspective, simply from the perspective of fourth dimensional existence, we have to. The concepts of demonology that fall under that are essentially this fourth dimensional space and time that where the oddest things are created. Some of the best artwork in the world is simply a reflection of a subconscious dream, you know, that somebody had. A non-ending vision, you know, or something. And that inspires the artist, the photographer, or the writer, or whatever, to create that metamorphosis, you know, and transcend that reality, if you will, third dimensional reality, into a fourth dimensional concept that can ride indefinitely beyond around the universe. You can be anywhere. Be anywhere if you know where you want to be without moving your body from the chair. There's so many avenues of mind, of the mind and mind control and freedom, you know, of your mind. What causes anger and rebellion? What causes violent protests and whatnot. And probably the most critical aspect of this is that we're now involved with an image or a vision. Right, that is supernatural, that is super conscious. And if you try to relate a super conscious spiritual message through the veil of third dimensional reality, phew, man, the filter, I mean, you it's so difficult. It's so difficult because you only know what you feel. You only know that. You can only express that. It's what you don't know that comes forth in so many ways, in vehicles that you create, be they art or writing or music or poetry, whatever the vehicle that you decide to choose, so that your creativity also becomes that third. It's a third dimensional instrument, you know, that channels the music that you hear in your mind, and that's channeled to you from the higher source. Most composers have all said, most of the great composers have all attributed the divine to what has created their greatest masterpieces, their greatest compositions. So these are we're almost wrote it in a trance. So what I'm saying is trying to judge who's, without knowing the person, what their favorite whatever song is. The stuff becomes irrelevant after as well. But I'm kind of losing my track here. I should go on with the reading. In the popular belief, ghosts are selecting tribe. Ghosts are a selecting tribe, avoiding millions, speaking to one. In our traditions, fairies, angels, and saints show the like favoritism. So do the agents and the means of magic, as sorcerers and amulets. This faith is a doting power, so easily sliding into the current belief everywhere, and in the particular lucky days and fortunate persons, as frequent as America today, as the faith in incantations and the filters was in old Rome. So, where the wholesome potency of this sign of the cross in modern Roman, this supposed power runs athwart the recognized agencies, natural and moral, which science and religion explore. Heeded though it be in many actions and partnerships, it is not the power to which we build churches, or make liturgies and prayers, or which we regard in passing laws or found college professors to expound. Goethe has said in his autobiography, "What is much to the purpose? I believe that I discovered in nature animate and inanimate intelligence and brute, which manifested itself only in the contradiction, and therefore could not be grasped by a conception, much less by a word. It was not godlike, since it seemed unreasonable, not human, since it was no understanding, not devilish, since it was beneficent, and not angelic, since it was often a marplot. It resembled chance, since it showed no sequel. It resembled providence, since it pointed at connection, and all which limits use us seemed permeable to that. It seemed to deal at pleasure with the necessary elements of our constitution. It shortened time and extended space. Only in the impossible it seemed to delight, and the possible to repel with contempt. This which seems to insert itself between all other things, to sever them, to bind them. I named the demoniacal after the example of the ancients and of those who had observed the light. Although every demoniacal property can manifest itself in the corporal and incorporeal, yes, in beasts too, in a remarkable manner, yet it stands especially in wonder relations with men and forms in the moral world, though not an antagonist, yet a transverse element, so that the former may be called the warp, and the latter the woof. From the phenomenon which hence originated, there are countless names, and all philosophies and religions have attempted to prose or in poetry to solve the riddle and to settle the thing once and for all, as indeed they will be allowed to do. But this demonic element appears most fruitful when it shows itself as a determining characteristic in an individual. In the course of my life, I have been able to observe several such, some near, some farther off. They are not always superior persons, either in mind or in talent. They seldom recommend themselves through God, goodness, or heart. But a monstrous force goes out from them, and they exert an incredible power over all creatures, and even over the elements. Who shall say how much or how such an influence may extend. All united moral powers avail nothing against them. In vain do the clear-headed part of mankind discredit them, as deceivers are deceived. The mass is attracted. Seldom or never do they meet their match among their contemporaries. They are not to be conquered save by the universe itself, against which they have taken up guns or arms. Some of such experiences doubtless arose the strange, monstrous proverb, nobody against God but God. It would be easy in the political history of every time to furnish examples of this irregular success. Men having a force which would, without virtue, without shining talent, yet makes them prevailing. No equal appears in the field against them. Power goes out from them which draws all men and even to the favor. The crime that they commit, the exposures which follow, and which would ruin any other man, are strangely overlooked or strangely turn to their account. I set down these things as I find them, but however poetic these twilights of thought, I like daylight, that I find somewhat willful, some play at blind man's bluff. When men as wise as both talk mysteriously of the demonological, the insinuation is that the known eternal laws of morals and matter are something corrupted by evaded by this gypsy principle, which chooses favorites and works in the dark chooses favorites and works in the dark for their behoof, as if the laws of the Father and the universe were something times balked and eluded by a meddlesome aunt of the universe for her pets. You will observe that this extends the popular idea of success to the very gods, that they foster a success to you, which is not a success to all. And the fortunate men, women, youths exist demonic is only a fine name for egotism, exaggeration namely of the individual, whom it is nature's subtle purpose to postpone. There is one world common to all who are awake, but each sleeper betakes himself to one of his own. Dreams retain the infirmities of our character, and the good genius makes maybe there or not, or evil. Life is also a dream on the same time. See if I can get through this tonight. Yeah, I don't know. I covered this last night, but the other night. I came to the end of that work and I didn't realize it was the end. We had about 20 minutes. I'll read this last piece and hopefully we can all piece it together. We may make great eyes if we like and say of one of the sunshine, but luck presides over him. But we know that the law of the universe is one for each and for all. There is a precise and describable a reason for every fact occurring to him, according to him. Every fact in which the moral element intermingled is not the less other the dominant dominion of fatal flaw. Lord Bacon undercovers the magic when he says, manifest virtues procure reputation, occult ones, fortune. Thus the so-called fortunate man is one who, though not gifted to speak with the people and listen, or to act with grace or with understanding to great ends, yet is one who, in action of a low or common pitch, relies on his instincts, and supplies that simply does not act where he should not, but waits his time and without effort acts when he needs it, his need is. If to this you add a fitness to the society around you, you have the elements of torture, of fortune rather, so that in particular circle and the knot of affairs, he is not so much his own man as the hand of nature and time. Just as his eyes and hand work exactly together, and to hit the mark with a stone, he has only to fasten his eye firmly on the mark, and his arm will swing true. So the main ambition and genius behind bestowed in one direction, the lesser spirit and involuntary aids with the player microphone. Folks, I'm kind of getting lost here on this tonight. I hope you bear with me. I have a tendency for this to happen when I read like this. I don't think I'll be doing this again. I'll be previewing my lectures before I read them. But I find this one to be extremely hard to concentrate with because there's several extraterrestrial essays that I've come across and in my researches, and this one falls into that category as far as I'm concerned. It kind of just takes you to another level of thought, another dimension, if you will. Takes me there. It pulls me away from reality, and it makes me concentrate on a dual reality that we exist in. And any time that you are discussing this kind of material, you can't expect to just plow through it like I tried to do. You have to taste it. You have to accept it that bit by bit and understand that, you know, you don't want to rush through this document. You want to savor it for whatever it is, you know, whatever the pleasure is that it gives you. And this essay on demonology, which I highly recommend to you, and you just go to the RWE.org, and all of his complete works are right there, and you can find this essay in the lecture section of his writings. And you'll find that in his way, he's pretty much documenting his travels there, you know, his understanding of it, and the research that he's done on it, and how it doesn't quite affect the or doesn't quite frequency, if you will. Everything operates on a frequency, and like this program. And once you expand that frequency from megahertz to, unlimited megahertz, then, it's unlimited terahertz, then you've created a warp in time. Created an underground, or above ground method of getting there to the one, to the inner circle, to the subconscious, if you will. You merged your subconscious and conscious minds together, and you've done it sexually or not. You should, prepare the mother child for pregnancy. I don't know where I'm going with this, but this is part of what demonology does to you. It distracts you. It distracts you from reality, third dimensional reality. Dressing up, brushing your teeth, going to sleep, waking up, going to work. These kind of activities are all interposed in two dimensions, essentially. And once we understand that we are bipolar, if you will, or we are two brains, right? Then we can make both brains work with each other and complement one another rather than try to destroy each other. And that's what happens, or balance each other. Sooner or later, we all go over the edge in one way or another. We either praise God fully and live monastic lives, or we live, realistically, or we live beyond realistically. Our approach to things. So, as I try to squeeze more minutes out of consciousness here. In consciousness, but I'm going to try my best. Coincidence dreams, animal magnetism, omen, sacred lots have all interest to some minds. They run into this twilight and say, there's more than is dreamed of in your philosophy. And certainly these facts are interesting and deserve to be considered, but they are entitled only to a share of attention and not a large share. Nil magnificum, nil generosum sapit. Let their value as exclusive subjects of attention be judged by the infallible test of the state of mind in which must notice of them leaves us. I get so gone when I read this. I get to a point where I don't know what he's talking about. I'm trying to follow it, but I'm getting lost, and I'm veering out too. So. Probably because it's getting late, but most people don't have to talk much at 9 o'clock at night. But when I consider the depth of this work, now that I've actually prepped it for you and myself, I believe that I can go, I can eventually go back to it or go beyond it to the following series, or the following essay. Which I wish to touch on next week, and it's called the Transcendentalist. And I want to get into that next week, which was the badge, if you will, that was created for Emerson and his readers, his followers. The whole world is an omen and a sign. Why look so wistfully in a corner? Man is the image of God. Why run against a ghost or a dream? The voice of divination resounds everywhere and runs to waste unheard, unregarded, as the mountains echo and the bleatings of cattle. And he says that demonology is the shadow of theology, which it is. You know, any run for God, you know, any faith, any hope, anything, there always seems to be that polar opposite, which is demons, you know, demonology. But I'm here to say that this doesn't really clarify it to me in any way other than the fact that he's saying it's just here, you know, it's just part of us. And, you know, we have to know that we have it, just as we know we have sun, we have moon, and light, we have dark, and it talks about the polarity of our the human nature. And I'm pressing for a non-negative approach to this work. And I don't know, that's the way I'm looking at it. And I found it to be fascinating tonight. I hope you did too. Again, I know I was rambling a bit on this subject, but I feel that we're about to go through a period of time where we are going to be rambling. Everybody's going to be rocking and rambling in the next few months. Those radiation levels get higher than ever, and we become, nuts. we become kind of nutty, and I guess that's where we're going to be going from now on, toward the nut house. The one I was going to touch on tomorrow, we don't have a program tomorrow, but on next week, was the idea of the Transcendentalist. And I wanted to read that essay for you, if I could find it again. Anyway, I'll bookmark it, and look at this thing. I look at all the works that he produced, and just marvel at how many incredible works he produced. And next week we will discuss the Transcendentalist. A lecture read at the Masonic Temple in Boston, 1842. And the first thing we have to say respecting what are called new views here in New England at this present time is that they are not new, but the very oldest of thoughts cast into the mold of these new times. And this is the beginning of Transcendental light is always identical in its composition, but it falls on a great variety of objects. By so falling, it first revealed to us, not in its own form, for it is formless, but in theirs. In like manner, though only appears in the object that it classifies, what is properly called transcendentalism among us is idealism. Idealism, as it appears in 1842, as thinkers, mankind has ever divided into two sects, materialists and idealists. The first class founding on experience, the second on consciousness. First class beginning to think from the data of the senses, and the second class perceives that the senses are not final and say, the senses give us representations of things, but what are the things themselves? They cannot tell. The materialist insists on facts, on history, on the force of circumstances and animal wants of man, an idealist on the power of thought and of will, on inspiration and miracle, on individual culture. These two molds of living are both natural, but the idealist contends that his way of thinking is the higher nature. We concede all that the others affirm, amidst the impressions of sense and amidst their coherency, their use and beauty, and then makes the materialist for his grounds of assurance that things are as they report them. Anyway, every materialist will be an idealist, but an idealist can never go back to be a materialist. And with that, I'm going to end that tonight. And we're going to go to this, we'll talk on this subject next week. Transcendentalist. I hope you will. That is the one of the key iconic lectures of Emerson, and we'll be discussing that. So I want to thank everybody for joining me tonight. I hope I didn't lose you in the process, but we will be bringing you more information next week, Tuesday night. I just want to thank everybody for the massive increase in audience lately. I hope this one will settle any questions, maybe or create more questions. I don't know about Ralph Waldo Emerson's work, but I really suggest that you go to that website, which is rwe.org. It has the complete works of Emerson there. And in the meantime, I'm going to say goodnight, everybody, and thanks for joining me. Talk to you next week. Oh, and by the way, please check out my new website, lasteelshow.org.